Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we'll be talking with Michigan Supreme Court Justice Richard Bernstein, who has been blind since birth.
We'll speak with him about challenges faced by blind individuals seeking employment and some new initiatives to employ the blind. And next week, we'll speak with him some more about his own personal experiences overcoming these challenges. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Justice Bernstein.
And I think we always have to be respectful of the fact that everyone has their own story. Everyone has their own unique perspective. And I think it's very important to always point out the fact no one blind person can speak for other blind people. No one disabled person can speak for other disabled people. I think we all have our own unique perspectives, and we all have our own unique stories, and we all have our own unique awareness of life that allows for us to experience life the way it was meant for us to experience it.
And that's so true. We each do have our own individual journeys to follow and our own individual issues to deal with, although at times there are some generalizations from which we can all learn and some experiences that may be similar to those experienced by other folks.
And I think we all run into experiences where other people, if you're the second one they've met that has some characteristic, some other person may assume that you're just like the first one of those that they've met. I know I ran into that when I hired into my position as a research physicist. There had been recently a female physicist about my age who had just left. And let me tell you, an awful lot of the guys assumed that I was a one-for-one replacement for her. And it just wasn't true. It's just they hadn't met any others.
So let's hear what Justice Bernstein has to say about some of the issues commonly faced by the visually impaired.
Let's start by meeting Justice Bernstein and learning a little bit about his background.
My name is Richard Bernstein, and I am a justice on the Michigan Supreme Court.
And this is a fairly recent occurrence, correct?
Yes, that is correct. I was elected in a statewide election this past November and assumed the position, took office in January.
Most of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
Well, yes, I am blind.
And how much vision do you have? Are you totally blind or you have some useful vision?
Yeah, extremely, extremely limited. And it's kind of funny that you asked the question because that was actually the theme of my election campaign, the idea of blind justice, to allow people to become introduced to the idea of having a person who is blind serving on Michigan's highest court.
Next week, we'll cover Justice Bernstein's academic and professional path that led him to his current position, including some of the challenges he's faced and accommodations he's made in order to be successful. And we will also discuss his prior work as a disability rights attorney.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is employment issues for people with visual impairments. We first heard about your election. It was from our son and his wife who live in Michigan. And I thought, man, there must have been all sorts of really tasteless jokes about blind justice. And then come to find out that you had preempted that by adopting it as a theme of the campaign, I thought was really good.
Absolutely, because we had to do kind of two things in this campaign that were absolutely critical. Not only was I running in a general election, you know, where you had a traditional election, but I also had to convince Michigan voters that it was okay to elect somebody with a severe disability. So you really had two elections kind of going at the same time. And the major focal point of my election was really helping for folks to understand and appreciate the idea of blindness. And that's why I used the idea of blind justice, because what it did was it created a sense of optimism and hope, and it was a fun campaign slogan. I wanted it to be fun. I wanted it to be kind of funny. You know, I wanted it to be a connection with people, that people, you know, didn't feel intimidated by it. And it made it fun and upbeat and entertaining. But at the same time, it allowed for me to address the serious issues that people had questions about as it pertained to the functional ability of a blind person to go into the position that I'm currently into. So that's why I came up with it. I thought it was necessary and essential to develop that as a campaign strategy so that people would ask the questions they wanted to ask and become more comfortable with electing someone like myself to the highest court within the state.
You know, I think that's a great way of approaching that potential problem. You know, so often I get the impression that politicians, they tend to avoid problems or hide them, make sure they don't come up. And in this case, you just confronted the issue head on, made it something people could talk about frankly and openly. And, you know, that way you kind of educated people and showed that it really wasn't such a big problem after all.
If you didn't do that, if you weren't able to connect with voters and connect with people, if you weren't able to allay people's fears and concerns about electing a blind person, if you allowed for it to remain as the elephant in the room, there is no question I would have lost this election. No question. People would not vote for someone if they had a concern that you couldn't do the job. So you have to take it upon yourself to allay the concerns of people. So by not talking about it or by not discussing it, people would have gone into that voting booth and they would have said, wow, you know what, that's really interesting, that's Richard Burstein, but I'm pretty sure he's blind, so I have this hesitancy because if he can't see, how is he going to perform at this job? And so you need to quell that. And it's really up to the candidate who's out there running to connect with the voters and allow for them to be put at ease. And it was really my responsibility and my job to do that. So that's why I had discussed it everywhere that I went. And also what was very important was you wanted to make it so that newspaper reporters and columnists and television reporters or radio reporters, all the various people that you were talking to, you wanted to make sure that they felt comfortable asking you questions. Because if they didn't feel comfortable addressing the issue or talking about it with you, they wouldn't ask those questions. And if they don't ask those questions, it's just going to sit there and it's going to be something that people are going to become everly concerned about. So I made it front and center an issue because I respect that people have concerns. I think that allowed for that connection to develop, and it was through that connection that I was able to be successful in this candidacy and then ultimately win a statewide election to become a Supreme Court justice.
You know, I think what you just said applies to anybody applying for any job or applying even to be a student in any program. The only difference is that you were basically interviewing for a job with millions and millions of voters, and most people only have a couple of decision makers they need to convince.
That's correct. And, you know, and that's why I'm enjoying this interview so much, because I really believe this is going to make a difference. And I'll just share with you a story about my experience when I was in law school. Now, I graduated from Northwestern Law School, and, you know, I was interviewing. I knew I was going to do public service. I knew this was my passion. I knew this is what I wanted to do. But I interviewed with all the various law firms that came on campus at Northwestern because I wanted to go through the interviewing experience. And as I interviewed with all these various law firms, this was, you know, to try to get a call back, to be given the opportunity to go back to the law firm to interview on a more extensive basis. I interviewed with 65 law firms that came on campus to Northwestern. Out of the 65 law firms that I interviewed with, I did not get a single call back, not a single call back. We're not talking about getting a job. We're talking about just getting a call back so that I could go back to the law firm to talk with them more about my candidacy to hopefully obtain employment. And I think that exactly as to what you were talking about, which was when I went for the interviews, people were just very apprehensive. They were very concerned. They saw the white cane. They saw a blind person. And I think what they naturally did was they would just kind of move forward to the next person. They would just simply say, you know what, there's a lot of other people that are interviewing, and it's just easier to move on to whoever is next than to kind of focus on this applicant. And that was very unfortunate because as I went through the process, you know, I came to realize that, you know, if I didn't have my family law firm that I was going to go back to, where I was going to focus on public service, I don't think I would have been able to find employment. And that sure was not for a lack of trying. I mean, after you interview with 65 different law firms, and my grades were very competitive. And, you know, Northwestern at that time had a 100% job placement rate. I mean, just think of that statistic, 100% job placement. And I couldn't get a single call back. So I think it just does come to show that, look, as far as we have gone in the realm of disability, and I think we have gone incredibly far, and I think differences have been made, and I think we should be incredibly proud and celebrate what has been accomplished and what has been achieved. I think it's important for us to always take note to the fact that we still have a long way to go, especially as it pertains to the issues of employment, and that's why I'm so glad that you guys are addressing it and talking about it today.
You know, I think sometimes for a visually impaired person, it's very difficult to get your first job because you don't have a proven track record. So it sounds to me like your foot in the door was that you had a family law firm and you were able to work there and then prove to other potential employers that you had the ability and a proven track record. Is that the case?
That's exactly the case. You have to get that first job and someone has to give you a break. Someone has to say, I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to give this person an opportunity. I want this to be successful. You need an employer. You need a recruiter. You need someone on the front lines who's willing to say, okay, I realize that this might be more challenging. I realize that this might be a little bit more difficult, but I want to make this work. I want to give this person an opportunity, and I want to kind of go outside the box to make that happen. You have to find someone who's willing to do that at the job placement level in order for this to become a success. Because once you get that first job, then you're absolutely right. You're able to explain to other people, hey, when I was in this position, I was able to do the following thing. But it's getting that first opportunity that is absolutely essential. So in my situation, I did have that first opportunity, and that's what led to all these other things. But for that first opportunity, I'm willing to venture that none of this would happen.
Sometimes I guess a person who is visually impaired may just have to find an alternate path and not the usual path that many people go through and be a little bit creative about how to get that first opportunity.
You know, it's funny. I'm in the process of doing a statewide tour with the lieutenant governor for the state of Michigan, and we're doing a jobs tour where we are traveling all across the state of Michigan. I mean, we are literally making the rounds across the entire state for that exact reason that you just stated. And there's actually been an executive order that was created here in the state of Michigan to basically allow for people with disabilities to find gainful employment within the state of Michigan. And that the state of Michigan could be used as a career, not just as a job, for people with disabilities. Now, this has been so successful. This executive order has been so successful in terms of its recruitment of people with disabilities on a statewide basis for government employment that our goal was to then move this initiative forward and to focus on the private sector, to focus on private industry, to get them to become energized and excited and enthused about hiring people with disabilities to work for them, whether it be physical disabilities or cognitive disabilities. And so what we've been doing is we've been partnering with the Chamber of Commerce on a statewide basis, and we have literally covered the entire state of Michigan. And by doing so, we have found that there is a lot of energy and excitement and enthusiasm on the part of private business to employ people with disabilities. So our goal in Michigan was create a successful template on a statewide basis within state government, and then use that as a model to get private enterprise and the Chamber of Commerce to buy in to create employment opportunities for people with disabilities and special needs.
Boy, this is a great example of when it really helps to have somebody at a high level championing the cause.
That is a great concept that you developed in Michigan to be able to start those programs within the government, but yet partner with industries and commercial entities to show them the success stories and that it really can be done, and that way kind of leverage your impact.
That's exactly right. And that's why I'm incredibly grateful to the Lieutenant Governor. I mean, this was the Lieutenant Governor's idea. This was his effort. This was his passion. He was the person that worked with the governor to create the executive order, to put this all into place. What I love is being a part of it as we travel across the state to showcase what is possible and what can be done. And, you know, that's really why the work that the LG and I are doing is so imperative, because what I've always found is that, you know, before you get to creating the logistics and the structure that goes into creating such a program, you know, before you get into how do we expand job opportunities, how do we expand employment opportunities, how do we do these kinds of things at a logistical basis, the most important thing you have to do is you have to show people what is possible. People have to know what can be done. And you have to let people see the excitement and the energy and the enthusiasm that can go into these kind of initiatives. Once people see what is possible, once people see what you are capable of doing, once people see that, oh my God, a blind person can actually do these kinds of things or achieve these kinds of things, the other things become easy. Employers will start making accommodations. Government will start putting forth incentives. But you literally have to show people that, wow, somebody with a disability is capable of doing things that you might not necessarily think that we are actually capable of doing in the first place.
And I think sometimes it's hard for people to make that leap of faith. You know, you don't see that many disabled people in the general population, and maybe people haven't interacted with so many disabled people. So all they see is a quote-unquote problem, but they don't see how many times those people have overcome difficulties.
So the biggest challenge that I think exists is exactly as to what you're saying. People with disabilities, we know what we can accomplish. We know what we can achieve. Our goal is to convince the able-bodied population and able-bodied employers and able-bodied decision makers that we can do it, if simply just given the opportunity or simply just given the chance to do so.
Right. A good deal of the burden is on our shoulders to educate others.
Well, I think that we have to recognize that, you know, indeed, I think that we have two things that we have to do. Number one is that we have to focus on exactly that. We have to reach out to non-disabled communities to let them appreciate and understand what our potential is and what we can accomplish and what we can achieve. But we also have to be very patient with people. You know, we can't assume that able-bodied people have a full understanding and have a full appreciation of everything that we're able to do. We have to make it so that people feel a comfort level with us so that they want us to be a part of their community. We don't want people being, you know, overly concerned or anxious about asking a question or saying the wrong thing. You don't want to create an environment where people are like, oh my God, you know, there's a blind person, but I don't want to say the wrong thing or I don't want to be offensive. So as a result, I'm just not going to approach them. I'm just not going to take a chance on it. But if we don't make people feel comfortable with us, then they're not going to bridge that gap. And yeah, I think a lot of it is our responsibility to let the able-bodied community take those steps to bridge the gap with us, because they have to feel as if they can without doing something that could create offensiveness on our part.
Do you have any recommendations for a blind person looking for a job?
If you're visually impaired, the best job opportunities tend to take place in government. Now, that doesn't mean you're guaranteed to find a position in government, but usually government, whether you're looking at state government and federal government especially, will usually kind of go out of its way to make the workplace a successful place for you to be a part of. So it's one of those situations where, you know, it's very, very difficult and very challenging to find employment no matter where you're looking. But if you're going to look, you know, for certain places where you'll have the best options, I would say that government tends to be the most open to hiring non-traditional candidates, or i.e. people with disabilities. They're usually more willing to make the necessary accommodations that are essential to provide for success. Whether those accommodations are expensive or not, government is really much more open to fulfilling that need.
Do you have any other suggestions for a blind job seeker?
I would just say this. We have to inspire folks. We have to excite folks as to why this is so important. Because, you know, there are some great companies here in Michigan where they employ people with disabilities all throughout their companies. And it's been fantastic. And what is exciting about it is that when people go to work for a company, they want to feel as though they're part of something grander, something bigger, something more noble. And what happens is, and what companies are realizing is, that if you employ disabled people, what you're doing is you're heightening the morale within your organization. And when you hire the morale within your organization, people come to work with a greater sense of mission and a greater sense of purpose and a greater sense of focus, because they come to believe that they're a part of something bigger and grander and more noble than themselves. And if you can do that, you've created an entirely new working environment. And just one other quick thing I want to say that I think is really important is that what you find with employers that actually go out of their way to include people with disabilities in employment is you come to find something extraordinary. You come to find that when you make modest accommodations, which is if you hire a blind person to work in an office, there's very modest accommodations that you will make to allow for a disabled person to work in this environment. And what you find is that the accommodations that you make for a disabled person don't just benefit the disabled person, they literally benefit everybody in the workplace. So if you do something and you're saying, okay, I'm going to do this to help the disabled, you know, employee, what you're really doing is you're making the workplace better for everybody, because it doesn't just help the disabled person, it genuinely helps all the employees in an incredibly, profoundly positive way.
And here are some final thoughts from Justice Bernstein.
Do we have a long way to go? Do we have challenges in front of us? Do we have difficulties that we still have to overcome? Absolutely. But what we have to do is we have to celebrate just how far we've been able to come. We have to celebrate what we've been able to accomplish and what we've been able to achieve. The fact that there are radio programs such as this, it's an absolutely remarkable thing that we should take incredible pride in. You know, just think about it this way. You know, 50 years ago, it used to be that if you had a disability, it was out of sight, out of mind. Your family would be encouraged to have you placed into an institutional environment and in many situations just be forgotten. But that isn't the case anymore. I mean, now we have radio programs like this. Now people with disabilities are front and center. Now everyone is aware and conscious of the fact that we're out there. You know, what I always like to say to people is that things that were at one time considered to be extraordinary have now just become ordinary. You don't really give a second look to the fact that a disabled person is riding on a bus or flying on an airplane or attending university or at your job location. You know, you don't even think about it anymore. Because in a lot of ways, it's become somewhat ordinary. And when things that were at one time seen as extraordinary, like literally seeing a wheelchair user get on a city bus, you know, that used to be just an extraordinary thing. I mean, people are like, oh my God, I can't even believe that. Now, something that at one time was at once extraordinary has become ordinary. You realize that we have made significant change and that we need to celebrate literally just how far we as a society, we as a community, but most importantly, we as a country have ultimately come.
Now for this week's final item, some of Justice Bernstein's recreational activities. It sounds like you spend an awful lot of time doing your job and then going around lobbying for employment opportunities for people with disabilities. But in your spare time, I understand you also participate in some fairly energetic adventures. Can you talk about some of that?
Oh, I would be delighted. I've had the chance to complete 18 marathons in a full Ironman competition. And so what I do as an athlete, I run with a team of guides, and they give me directional cues. So they're going to say hard right, soft right, hard left, soft left, and you focus on those directional cues as you're running. So that's, you know, kind of been my blessing, is to have had that opportunity to do the 18 marathons. And I want your listeners, if they could, to picture how it would feel as a blind person to do a full Ironman competition. You know, imagine diving into a frigid body of water. The water temperature that morning was 55 degrees. Imagine swimming in total darkness. You don't have any idea where you started. You don't have any idea where you're going. And you don't have any idea where you are. You keep getting kicked in the face over and over by all the other competitors because you're the only blind person in this race. And I want you to imagine how you would feel when other swimmers become entangled in the rope that connects you to your guide. And the reason I love doing athletic competition as a blind person is I don't think there's anything better than kind of working as a team, having a team of guides help direct you, help guide you, following their directional cues, following kind of what they say and how to do it, you know, working with them to help you navigate through a course or through a swim or through all the various challenges. What I think that athletics really does is athletics teaches you about life. And I think the greatest blessing that comes from being an 18-time marathoner or Ironman competition is you come to realize that no matter how challenging, no matter how difficult, no matter how hard things can ultimately be, what you come to realize, so you'll always have what you need when you need it. You won't have anything more, but you'll never have anything less. That's why athletics, I think, really makes the biggest difference in life, because athletics teaches you how to face the challenges, how to deal with the pain, how to face the uncertainty, but how to recognize the fact that at the end of the day, you have what you need when you need it. No matter how scary, no matter how challenging, no matter how difficult, you always find that you can work your way through it and that things will always usually work out for the best.
And in our show notes for this episode, we'll have links to some articles where you can learn more about the judge and links to his website where you can find out more. So just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net and look for those show notes.
That's it for show number 1525. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll continue the conversation with Michigan State Supreme Court Justice Richard Bernstein about his personal experiences becoming and being a blind judge. We'll talk with him about his academic and professional path that led him to this position, including some of the challenges he's faced and some accommodations he's made in order to be successful. And we will also talk about some of his experiences as a disability rights advocacy attorney. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com at Eyes on Success or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.